Why B2B companies need evangelists. Welcome back to a fresh episode of BreakingB2B.com. I'm your host, Sam Dunning. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying past podcast episodes, check out our daily newsletter, or if you want to apply to work with us, head over to breakingb2b.com. So today, my guest is Logan Lyles. He's the evangelist and content master over at Teamwork. He also runs his own consultancy. We're going to be diving into why B2B companies need evangelists. We're going to be doing a bit of a breakdown. We talk about exactly what B2B evangelist means, why you should consider one, why you might want to consider prioritizing individuals in your org as opposed to your company brand, and diving into a step-by-step of how you can play the B2B evangelist role and make it actually drive qualified leads, pipeline, and revenue for your business. We've got to give a huge shout out to Factors.ai. In B2B, there's a few harsh truths. At best, only 4% of your website visitors convert into sales calls, and less than 1% of the outbound account list ends up making a purchase. By the time people request a demo or call, they're already late in their stages of evaluation. Smart B2B companies don't wait for people to magically buy. Instead, they expand their sales pipeline by tapping into intent signals. Factors.ai identifies prospects showing buying intent on your website, LinkedIn, and G2. Prospect into high intent accounts at the moment they're buying. Make it easy for your team to generate revenue and get more from every dollar spent. The best part, you can attribute and track everything seamlessly through the Factors.ai platform. Don't miss out, grab a free trial today and start maximizing your revenue over at Factors.ai. So with that, Logan, welcome to the show, sir. How are we?
Thank you so much, Sam. That was quite the intro. I love your show, love your content, and I'm excited to talk about this. I've been kind of referring to myself as the evangelist's evangelist. I'm evangelizing evangelism these days quite a bit on LinkedIn and on podcasts. So it's a little bit meta, but I think we'll give people some good things. What's going on with evangelism right now? And like you said, I'm always a fan of giving people step-by-step some how-tos out of the conversation, not just talking theory.
Appreciate it, sir. So I think you are the man for the B2B evangelist job when it comes to all these side of things. So first things first, for anyone that's not familiar with this, what the heck does B2B evangelism mean, or what is a B2B evangelist?
Yeah, from here, I think I will kind of hearken to a quote I heard from one of my friends, Ethan Butte, longtime friend and colleague. He's out here in Colorado as well, has been a B2B SaaS marketer for a long time. And he said, evangelism is the purest form of sales. And to me, the job of an evangelist, whether that's someone internal, like a chief evangelist, we've seen that title come into prominence in B2B marketing, maybe not prominence, but at least more recognizable and seen than it has been in past years. Or as we'll talk about here, there are other sorts of maybe mini evangelists that you can tap into as a marketing team or as a founder that are maybe outside of your four digital walls of the company. But I think at its core, an evangelist is someone who is, contributing to what we said there, the purest form of sales. They're evangelizing the problem. They know the market. They are sharing helpful content, not so much to immediately sell, but to rally the community together around the problem. They see the solution in a different way. There's a little bit of thought leadership maybe mixed in there to throw in another B2B marketing buzzword. But I think to me, that's kind of how I think about evangelism. What do you think there, Sam?
I like it. I like that quote, the purest form of sales. It sounds pretty epic, actually. So you tapped into a little bit about what's actually entailed. You talk about evangelists kind of sharing the problem that perhaps your organization fixes, sharing content. So when we say evangelists in a B2B context for B2B service companies or tech companies that are tuning in,
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that they're active on social? Does that mean they're somewhere else? I mean, what are these folks doing? We're going to dive into a step-by-step later, but mm-hmm. I guess to wrap a bit of context around it, what are these folks actually doing in terms of the work they're putting in?
Yeah. And I think to put this into context, it's worth kind of zooming out and looking at the market conditions of why evangelists are necessary for your marketing efforts right now. And to hearken to another quote from a good friend of mine, Jared Fuller, over at Reveal, he's been really talking about this concept of how we're moving from the how economy to the who economy. And essentially what I've heard him say there is that, you know, we're going from the information age to now information overload, right? We can all go to Google, we can all go to YouTube, and we can say, how do I solve this problem? How do I set up an ABM campaign? How do I rank first on Google, right? All of those sorts of things. But the thing that is different now is there's so many more sources of information that people can go to for the how. What they're often doing is they're still Googling, right? You're one of those who's evangelizing the idea that SEO is not dead. And I agree with you on that, right? But at the same time, people are going to Google, but they're saying, who do I know that can give me solid advice here? Or maybe I've gone to Google and I've got maybe three different answers. Who do I know that can help me shortcut my path to learning or my path to an outcome and a solution? And so they're going to their network, they're going to their peers, right? Chris Walker has been talking about this dark social concept for a long time. And so I think the evangelists, they are the who that your potential buyers and your prospects that they trust, that they're thinking of when they ask that question, who can I trust to give me some valuable information? And so to me, I've really focused on activating those quote unquote who's, those evangelists on social. You know, my primary move from sales, 10 years of sales into B2B marketing has primarily been driven, and most of my activity has been on LinkedIn. So I see that as, you know, a key way where evangelists can get active, whether they're internal within your company or external. I think LinkedIn is kind of low-hanging fruit where folks can get involved in creating and helping distribute other content as an evangelist. There are other ways, obviously podcasting, webinars, live streams, other things like that. But I think for most B2B marketers listening to this, I think they'd be highly interested in, if I've identified some of these evangelists, how do I get them involved in our...
Oh, that last part just broke off, Logan. I don't know if that was just my end, but could you repeat that last two-liner?
Oh, man, I had a zinger there, too. I was saying, you know, for most B2B marketers listening to this, especially if they are getting crickets on their LinkedIn company page, then I think LinkedIn organic and maybe even paid, we can talk about how maybe thought leader ads can play into this evangelist strategy here in a bit. I think LinkedIn is some low-hanging fruit within the subset of social media where your evangelists can get active in co-creating content and co-distributing content with you as a B2B marketing team or an earlier stage founder.
Got it. I think something you mentioned just now, who do I know that I can trust in my network that can help with this? Mm-hmm. I think that's so powerful. It's almost like a trump card, isn't it? Because I can think of so many times in years gone by when just by seeing folks that I've maybe not even had any interaction with directly, but because in our case, in the tech space, we're on LinkedIn every hour of the day, if you're me, messing around, scrolling around, commenting, whatever it may be, when it comes to certain topics, and I realize that I might have a need, sometimes these folks just come into my head purely because I've seen them in the feed so much, posting about this specific niche, this specific topic, this specific industry, that it's almost a no-brainer that they'll be one of the few people that I reach out to. So that definitely rings a bell, and I'm sure other people can relate to that too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the question then you want to ask is, if my buyers are asking this question, how are they answering that question right now? Who are the people that they trust? Who are the people that have their attention? And sometimes... now made it a little bit harder to click through and search a hashtag. But if you search a hashtag that is commonly used by your audience, right, and you find a post by someone, let's say in B2B marketing, it's Chris Walker, click that hashtag that says B2B marketing and see who else is posting on that, right? Also talk to your customers, ask them a simple question. Who are you following on social? Who is influencing your thinking? Those sorts of things. Another tool that's I think very helpful in this area is one from Rand Fishkin called SparkToro that allows you to do basically what I was talking about there, but more at scale. You can go into their platform and say, my audience usually uses these words in their title or their description in their profile on social, or they're talking about these things. What are the podcasts they're listening to? What are the YouTube channels they're subscribed to? What are the sites that they're visiting? What are the social handles that they're following? Check that out and then start doing some outreach. And then those can be some of those external folks, maybe a creator or an influencer that could be an evangelist for you in this motion, even if they're not kind of that internal chief evangelist.
Got it. Yeah, my next question was going to be, does being an evangelist for a B2B company, is that a full-time role? Mm-hmm. Is the answer, it depends. Like, it can be part-time, it can be not. Is there like a specific person within your org that you should kind of think that that's definitely got to be the evangelist for our business?
Yeah, it's interesting. So in my role at teamwork.com, it kind of started as me being an evangelist. I started hosting our Agency Life podcast because agencies, both marketing, PR, web development, those sorts of agencies make up a good portion of our ICP at teamwork.com. And I came from 4 years at a podcast production agency. So I knew our ICP from being our ICP. So coming on, being the host, tapping my network, getting active on LinkedIn and sharing what we were doing and creating some new brand awareness for teamwork.com made a lot of sense. Now we're kind of expanding into other professional services, such as architecture and engineering, IT services, consultancies. And those folks, you know, maybe I'm not necessarily the evangelist who knows them really, really well. And so what I'm kind of doing is tapping who else can be the mini evangelists, both internally in our team and externally, that really have expertise in those areas to reach that ICP. Maybe they have an existing audience and they're ready and willing to participate and collaborate. It's a little bit of an acronym I've created called that's EAR, putting your ear to the market to see who could be your evangelist. And you want to look at their expertise, their audience, and their identified three types of internal evangelists and three types of external evangelists, but I think whoever they are on kind of those six buckets or areas, if you will, those are the qualities that you want with that EAR, EAR acronym, if you will.
Like it. All right, that sets us up nicely. So let's dive into a bit of a step by step when it comes to you've started off nicely there by kind of identifying who we should look at for kind of whether it's our chief evangelist. It sounds like we could have kind of a dedicated evangelist and perhaps mini evangelists, depending on who has expertise within the niche. Is that the first step if we want to put this into play for our organization, or is there something that we should do beforehand, i.e. some kind of research in the market or planning or similar?
Yeah, I think it really does start with, I've got five steps that I typically recommend to folks. And we've been talking about number one here is identify your potential evangelist. I think kind of prior to that, it's really recognizing the need for it, which is kind of what we were talking about in the open, the why, the importance of the who, now that we've moved from the how economy to the who economy. So you're exactly right, Sam. It really does start here with identification. The following of the five steps I typically recommend after identify are then evaluate, activate, distribute, and then track. Any good B2B marketing needs to have some tracking. So we want to look at both qualitatively and quantitatively. How is this working in our motion to try and identify, evaluate, activate, and distribute content with our evangelists? And I'll pause right there. I think that word with is really important. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase, Sam, but I chuckled when I heard it on a podcast the other day. And it was, marketers ruin everything. And I've seen that happen, right? I think that's maybe a little heavy-handed for us that try to do marketing well, but we can, right? We can ruin a lot of things by making them just feel wrong. And I think one way you could get this wrong is seeing evangelists as a new channel to distribute content through, rather than a new motion and a new group of people to create content with and distribute content with. So as we talk through these steps, I want people to keep in mind that with and not through, so that we don't become the marketers that ruin everything.
Yeah. I can definitely think of a few scenarios where I've seen marketers butcher stuff to the ground, but we won't divulge too much as we could go on for a while. So we've gone to step one, identify who should be the evangelist. So you said it's got step two, evaluate, step three, activate, step four, distribute, and step five, I believe, track. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to evaluate, what does that mean in this context?
Yeah, so I think it starts with those three characteristics we were talking about. Do they have expertise, audience, and readiness? And I think the big misstep here is so often we think about the audience, right? If we're thinking about an external evangelist, like an influencer or a content creator, oh, they have 100,000 followers on LinkedIn. Well, if they're not ready and willing to collaborate, if you can't kind of pitch them on some mutual value to create content together and distribute it together, then it's not going to be a good fit. Right? Or internally, if you're looking at one of your executives, maybe your founders, I think Dave Gearhart's model of a founder brand fits in here as you're looking at maybe activating an internal evangelist. And during my time at Sweetfish, the podcast production agency I was mentioning earlier, we saw so many clients come in and say, we want to start a podcast. Our CEO is going to be the host. He's so charismatic. He's got all these connections and all this expertise. But it was like pulling teeth to get them to show up to host a weekly podcast or even a bi-weekly podcast. So if that readiness isn't there, then it's kind of a non-starter. And so from there, I recommend people start small, start internal first, and then move external. Because again, this is it's about the who, right? So the relationships are important. It's not just, hey, let's flip on another tactic. Let's start posting on TikTok or whatever the case is, right? And so there are some nuances to how you pitch those people, how you keep them engaged, how you motivate and incentivize them, those sorts of things. So I would say start small and start internal. Maybe it is one of those executives and you kind of want to execute founder brand, and then you move to kind of an employee advocacy program. And then you're like, well, this is really working. I could take this exact same motion and use this to activate that external influencer. And I've kind of learned some of the nuances of managing those internal relationships.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, I wasn't even considering external when we started the conversation. So you're saying that it typically makes sense to start with someone within the company and then kind of get some kind of consistency flowing with that cadence, whatever that looks like, whether it was a podcast, posting content on LinkedIn or another channel. And then once that's flowing, perhaps look for external influencers. I'm guessing if we're looking at it from a LinkedIn perspective, perhaps a creator that's got a decent audience that falls within your niche, that talks about the topics that are relevant to your industry.
Yep. And they could be an individual creator, or they could be an individual within a brand that also has the eyes and ears of your audience, right? So in my case at teamwork.com, I started looking at, especially when we're really focused in on agencies, okay, there's folks like Pete Caputa who have consulted hundreds of agencies in his time building the HubSpot partner program, right? The folks in and around the HubSpot ecosystem, right? Those sorts of folks. How can I build relationships with those people? Create content with them. And to give you an example of kind of how this went from internal to external, as a quick example of what we were talking about there, Sam, last year we created at teamwork.com our State of Agency Operations report. And it was a big research study, and we had a large report that generated out of that. And of course, we did a webinar to break that down, right? But we're sharing that on social. We're distributing that report. And I had a screenshot of one of our company page posts that had like two or three engagements. And one of the things I did in looking at, hey, this is an existing demand gen thing that we're doing. We're doing this report, we're sharing it out on social. How can I bring in an external evangelist to help us reach a new audience with this existing content. So what I did was I found Pete at Inbound, Pete Caputa. He's the CEO of Databox, if people don't know his name already. And I said, hey, Pete, here's one stat from this report. Can you kind of respond to this? I'll record it. Got him on video. I chopped that down to a quick 45-second, you know, short form video, shared that with them and said, hey, do you want to share this on LinkedIn? I actually asked him before I created the video. And then that post got over 100 engagements, tons and tons of comments and reposts. So that was a good example, I think, of activating an external evangelist, but not on something brand new. Like, we didn't have a influencer partner program set up and going. So if you're listening to this and you're an early stage company, or maybe you're a service-based business like an agency, there are some motions like this that you can leverage in your existing marketing to tap an external evangelist, like in this example with Pete and our state of agency operations report.
Any tips? So I suppose when you're finding someone internal to be your evangelist, it's not as difficult. Perhaps, I could be wrong, feel free to correct me, as finding an external evangelist, unless there's someone already in your network that you're perhaps following or that's been recommended.
Yeah.
Any tips for someone that's perhaps looking for a brand that's looking for an external evangelist on the best ways to identify, I suppose, someone that's actually going to be worthwhile for mm-hmm. your company? I.e., I'm guessing there's some occasions where you perhaps are paying them, some perhaps you're doing partnerships, some perhaps it's reciprocal. I guess there's different ways of working together, right?
Oh, it broke up there for just a second, Sam. You were saying recognizing those external folks, and you said perhaps partnerships, and then I missed right after that.
Yeah, so I was saying, one, I guess it's a twofold question. Okay. One, tips on how to identify an external evangelist that's going to be worthwhile working together with your company, i.e. they've got a decent following that's going to be mm-hmm. relevant to the audience you want to attract. And then secondly, whether we should be kind of offering them payment, or whether mm-hmm. we should be doing something in return for a partnership, or maybe we create content for them and we do yep. something back for us. Any yeah. tips on kind of that collaboration front, I guess?
Yeah. So I think in identifying the external folks, think about these three buckets. I was mentioning kind of the three internal, three external earlier. The three external, I kind of bucket into creators and influencers, partners. So if you have either an affiliate partner program or a reseller or solution partner program, or maybe you have a tech partner program, right? The partner can mean a lot of different things. So that middle bucket, really, it can be quite big. And then third would be your customers, who are those advocates that are saying great things. You know, right now we've been working on a new process here at teamwork.com to we have this kind of internal celebration channel when we get great feedback from a customer and they're like, we love teamwork.com, or your support is amazing. And we haven't had a steady kind of streamlined process to turn that into content that then they would be able to share. And so that's another bucket that just in real life practicality, I'm working on trying to figure out how do we optimize that right now. So think about those three to your first question about identifying external partners, those three buckets. Who do I know in those? Create a spreadsheet, create three columns, just start listing people. Start asking your sales team, your CS team, who are these folks that look like this that our customers are talking about? And then when it comes to incentivization, is that a word? How to incentivize them, right? That's a big word for a Monday morning. I need another cup of coffee. But oftentimes I have found that if you, I think this was Amanda at SparkToro that I first heard this from, execute a little bit of permissionless co-marketing. And I've heard you kind of talk about this under a different name as well, Sam. Just approach them and say, hey, would you be willing to be a guest on our podcast, or be a guest on our webinar, or be quoted for this blog? Like, start with something very light that you just pitch. The mutual value is very light touch and low lift for them, and see right. if they're willing, right? And kind of use that then to say, okay, well, what if we did a series together where da da da, and you kind of pitch them on something more? It's kind of like go on that first date before you know, propose to them and show them what you're offering them in payment and return and all that sort of stuff. When you get to that next phase, I've found that oftentimes if you're willing to do a lot of the heavy lifting of the creation, then they're not always expecting payment back for a sponsored post or affiliate commissions and those sorts of things, and just saying, hey, I see you're talking about this. What if I interviewed you, teed you up to talk about those? We created some co-branded assets out of that. And they're like, sweet, that's going to, you know, help me not have to do so much production on my content for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to get it out there. But then you could go to kind of a pay for performance with like an affiliate structure. If you're using PartnerStack or Everflow, you could use, you know, and say, hey, we're going to give you 10% of the recurring revenue, 20% or whatever, if they follow your link. But oftentimes you don't have to kind of go to that third step. So that's kind of how I think about it in sequential order, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Solid tips. I think what you said there, starting with a small ask, whether that is inviting them to the show, getting them to contribute to an article, going on to a video series, like you say. And as long as they can see that it's genuinely worthwhile on their part as well, i.e. we're not doing all this me stuff, i.e. you're coming on your show, we're going to steal all the content and get all the goodies out of it. But we're actually saying, look, this audience is probably relevant for you. Here's how we're going to promote it. We're going to give you all these video clips after the article, the artwork. We're going to put some paid spend behind it to distribute it. So your ICP is going to see it. You'll probably get some inbound leads off the back of it. Mm-hmm. Almost makes it a no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm. Breaking B2B is sponsored by Revenue Hero. Did you ever fill in a website inquiry form only to wait hours or even days to hear back from a sales rep? Then comes the endless back and forth trying to schedule a time that works for everyone. It's painful, right? Leads slip through the cracks along with a ton of lost revenue. Revenue Hero fixes this painful process for B2B companies just like yours, allowing prospects to book a time on your sales team's calendar instantly from the website. Behind the scenes, marketing can even route qualified leads to the best sales rep for the job. Hundreds of businesses automate their request a demo or book a call workflow with Revenue Hero, including app queues, Inflection, Ultimate AI, Customer IO, and User Evidence. B2B marketers can see increases in up to 80% of qualified meetings booked. See Revenue Hero in action for yourself today at revenuehero.io. That's revenuehero.io, and grab a free demo.
So yeah, like I was saying, really, I think it's understanding from that prospect's, that potential evangelist in your case, point of view, mm-hmm. what are they going to get on the back end of it? And yeah. I think you put it quite nicely there.
Yeah, and I think what we're talking about here is kind of that third step in activation, right? And I was sharing on a webinar recently about this process of leveraging is a bad word. Maybe that's going to the through and not with, but working with your evangelists in activating them, kind of starting with podcasts, webinars, kind of a light lift, kind of interview based. You know, when I invite people onto our monthly webinar series at teamwork.com, one thing that I never do is ask them to prepare the deck. I ask them to come on a prep call so that we can align on the flow and the talking points and those sorts of things. But I get a lot more people who are willing and able, and give them more time to focus on promoting the webinar by taking the heavy lift out of, don't come on and just present. Let's agree on where we want to go. And then I'll kind of turn on my podcast hosting skills and use that for the webinar to just tease out the great content from you. And I'll kind of run the deck as we're doing that. Another way that you can activate them is similar to the story I shared earlier from inbound, and kind of a reaction video, to steal kind of a term that we see a lot on YouTube, is use a tool like Video Ask or Vouch that allows you to collect videos asynchronously from folks. So another thing we did with that State of Agency Operations report is I created a Video Ask, which it's part of Typeform, just like a Google form or a Typeform. You can create a form, people can respond to it and input and answer questions. But what Video Ask does is allow you to embed a video, and it allows the recipient to reply with a video instead of just being able to type back text. Now, they could do either, right? So picture this, you have a piece of content that you've created, a big, you know, guide or a report or even just a nice blog post. And then you've identified some of those external evangelists. You send them a Video Ask form that says, hey, it would be great to get your thoughts on this portion of this blog post or this stat out of the report. You don't have to meet them up and corner them at a conference like I did in that example. You could just identify some of those people from that spreadsheet we talked about starting earlier and just send them an email, and you can use that same form to send it to all of those potential external evangelists, have them reply with video, and then bring that into a tool and have that branded, you know, with your colors and font and that sort of stuff. And now you've got content to share on your side, and then you can give that back to the evangelist again, taking the content production off their plate and saying, hey, here's a 60-second snippet where we made you sound really smart. We cut out all the ums and the silences and put captions on it so that you can share this on social tomorrow.
Yeah. So like you say, doing a lot of that heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. So if you are using external evangelists, just making it super easy for them to participate, do a little piece of work, and then you do the rest in terms of putting it together, producing, delivery, and all that good stuff. Cool. Mm-hmm. I just want to take a little step back. So for folks that have tuned in so far, listened or watched and thought, quite like the sound of this B2B evangelist stuff, sounds like there could be some results to be gained. If a company is starting, let's say, Light Touch, i.e. they've identified someone in the organization they think can speak to the problem they fix, has perhaps already got a small following in their niche around the audience they want to actually be talking to, mm-hmm. is there like a flow, a cadence, whatever you want to call it, that they should be following, i.e. if we're on LinkedIn, they should maybe do 2-3 posts a month, or if we're on a podcast, mm-hmm. they should be doing X amount a month,
yeah.
that is going to be, I guess, a Light Touch start, or what you recommend, Logan, perhaps from clients that you've helped, so they can steadily get into it and I guess see some kind of results rather than kind of doing it once, leaving it for a couple months, getting back into it. Is there a Light Touch way that a company that's brand new to this that wants to start to internally should mm-hmm. consider?
Yeah, I think, like you said, if you have a podcast or a webinar series, some sort of ongoing pillar content, especially if it's interview based, like, you know, I've seen you talk about in a post, I think this week on LinkedIn, like podcasting and interview based content is a great way to network, right? But oftentimes, if you're early stage, thinking about, man, we got to release a podcast every week or even every other week. We don't even have it launched yet. How do we get that set up in all the directories? Should we have it on YouTube if we're going to spend our time doing this? So one way that I've seen people work around this, and I've done some consulting to this end, is set up a monthly recording call with that internal evangelist. Let's say it's your founder, right? And get away from the, we have to launch a podcast and we have to, because sometimes people do that just for the micro content, but then they get in their own way and like, okay, what are we going to name it? They start looking at the downloads and all these sorts of things, and they forget, initially, we just wanted to get our CEO talking and get him on video out on LinkedIn. Well, just focus on that end game that you've decided is a priority. Set up a monthly recording call. You can use a tool like Riverside.fm if you want to up-level the quality just a little bit from Zoom. It's just like jumping on a Zoom call. Hit record and just have the conversation. What are you seeing? What conversations have you had in the industry? Ask them some point of view discovery questions. You know, what's a commonly held belief about X, X being your industry, that you passionately disagree with? And I think setting up a monthly content call with that internal evangelist, your founder or executive or your CEO, whoever he or she is, with the intention that you're going to leave most of it on the cutting room floor. That removes kind of the pressure from you as the marketer and the contributor, that internal evangelist. And then you have one-hour session. You could easily get 2-3 posts a week, you know, a month's worth of content where you've got 8, 12, 15, maybe even 20 posts out of that one session, and just start there. But don't put yourself in the position of, well, we also have to edit the full length and get it on Apple and get it on YouTube and all those sorts of things. That would be ideal. But it, again, if you're early stage and you only have so many resources, focus on kind of that quicker win, getting it out to LinkedIn sooner.
It's the age old thing I find with not just marketing, but pretty much getting anything done in B2B companies. Mm-hmm. They always think they've got to run before they can walk. So like you laid out perfectly there,
yeah,
that 1 month recording session, be it your CEO, be it your marketing leader, whoever is the subject matter expert, just saying, look, we're going to do a Light Touch. We're going to do a session on video, Riverside, Zoom, whatever, 1 hour every Friday morning.
Yeah.
Maybe we do it face-to-face, maybe we do it digital, whatever works best. And then we're going to just talk about what you know about. Like, it's not going to be high pressure. You're literally the expert in this subject. We're going to ask you questions around what you know, your point of view. Maybe we'll throw in some common sales questions there. Maybe we'll throw in some common sales objections. Maybe you ask you about what's going on in the industry now. Maybe we'll throw in some stuff we've seen other similar creators on LinkedIn and get your point of view on that. Like you said, it's such a comfortable thing for their point of view. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it overcomes some of the common obstacles because you might have that CEO, like our CEO at teamwork.com, Peter Coppinger. He was an agency founder himself. He's very well spoken. He knows the industry. He knows our ICP, right? But saying, hey, Peter, can you post on LinkedIn? Can you write some new content, right? Like even the founder who is a great writer, they don't necessarily have time to stare at that blinking cursor in a Google Doc or in the LinkedIn draft window, right? And so you overcome that and just saying, hey, let me get you talking, right? Which those executives are great at showing up and responding to those questions. The other thing that this overcomes, and I recently came across a company called Matchbook. Look up Tom Serko and the team at Matchbook, pairing creators with companies on LinkedIn. They are starting to talk about this idea of a ghost host. So let's say you're like, I could do this, but Logan, I'm not a podcast host. I can't kind of, you know, manage a live stream and host a podcast. Like I have this great executive and I want to get stuff out of them, but I can't kind of play that role of host in a public facing format, or maybe I just don't want to, right? Be that quote unquote ghost host who just shows up to that 1 hour recording session on Riverside with that internal executive that you're turning into evangelist and just ask them the questions and never appear in the video. Just chop out their side of it, right? Because Riverside, for example, gives you the host and the guest track. Just take the quote unquote guest track, and that's your evangelist content. And you can kind of step back and you don't have to step into the limelight. So I just want to touch on some of the more human obstacles that I think some people are facing that sometimes we don't talk about. We just jump to the tactics and we just assume, well, we should just do this in B2B marketing. Well, what about the personalities and the skill sets of different people here?
Great point. Great point. Exactly like you say. Like everyone has their skill set, i.e. some people are great at copywriting. Mm-hmm. So they're in their case, they might be super good at writing long form LinkedIn posts, blog articles, and they'll be killer. They'll engage the audience, but they hate being on audio or they hate being on camera. Mm-hmm. And then they might not be the best fit. They might be able to do some killer copy and kind of talk about some of the problems you fix and kind of portray their point of view and various other things. But then you might have someone in your team that is great on camera. And like you said, you might have a host that can ask great questions, but they don't want to be on video.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's just a great summary, man.
Just understanding folks' skill sets, whether they are internally or externally, is sound advice. Mm-hmm. And then understanding how you can play to their strengths.
Yeah.
Appreciate that's going to be a lot tougher if you're in a smaller company. Perhaps it's just you and a couple others. So you'll have to think what works. And you might have to step outside your comfort zone, which is one of those things in business. But if you've got the luxury of being in a bigger organization, then you can kind of take people's skill sets and use that to what fits best.
Yep.
Nice. So I think we've done, of those five steps, I think we've done identify, evaluate, activate. Have we touched on distribute, number four?
I don't think we have. And a couple of things, it kind of ties into what you were just saying there. So it was just a natural segue for folks who want to level up their hosting skills. Just listen to Sam's show and listen to what he's doing in addition to the content.
And do the opposite, yeah?
No. but, you know, I've come across another tool that I've been using in my own podcast production, I think applies here to help you distribute more, especially if you're early stage and you have limited resources, like Sam was just saying. Check out Cast Magic. So it is a tool that has podcast implications, but could have also implications here in activating evangelists or just doing a recording call. So what Cast Magic can do is use the power of an AI engine, like I believe it runs on ChatGPT, but without having to give it all individual prompts, and it can take longer audio and video and transcribe it. So you have to give ChatGPT a transcript that you've generated and then give it all these different prompts. So for instance, if you have a podcast or you're doing this kind of monthly recording session with a quote unquote ghost host, if we want to keep going with that term that we've been talking about the last 5 minutes or so, you drop that into Cast Magic and that can turn your content into a blog article, into a tweet thread, into a LinkedIn post. And as with most AI, is it going to be 100% amazing? Maybe not, but it might give you 60, 70% of the way there to accelerate that content production so that you can say, oh yeah, this was a really good summary. This did pull out four of the five things that I probably would. Let me add to this and tweak it. Now I've got a tweet thread that I can push out through through that evangelist. So I think tools like that on the creation side will help you with the distribution. And then I think on the actual pushing out and distribution piece, thinking about LinkedIn thought leader ads. So a lot of people, especially if you're early stage, you're like, oh, LinkedIn advertising, way too expensive, right? The freaking targeting you can get on LinkedIn is bar none in B2B, right? You and I both know this, Sam. And what's really interesting is LinkedIn has now, in the last year or so, rolled out a feature that, if you haven't heard of it, called LinkedIn Thought Leader Ads. So if content is being shared by one of your employees, they can post that organically. It's getting reactions. It's getting comments. You can say, our CEO's post just got 50 reactions and 30 comments. Like, that's pretty good for them. Let's put some paid spend behind that and show that post to either a targeted list of accounts. You can upload, you know, your specific target account list if you're in a more account-based environment in B2B, which most of us kind of are, or your parameters of, I want it to go to manufacturing companies between 50 and 500 employees in the US, and LinkedIn is, I hear, maybe even expanding this to external people. So Sam, let's say I identify you as an external evangelist. We create some content together. You share that, kind of similar to what we were talking about before, and it really goes off. Now I could maybe even promote that to exactly the right targeted audience that I want to on LinkedIn. That still remains to be seen, but a way around that is you could add to your work experience as an advisor to teamwork.com or a partner in your work experience. And now you're quote unquote an employee as far as LinkedIn's concerned. And now we could leverage LinkedIn thought leader ads to distribute that even more effectively. So I'm talking about, you know, some things that might be new to folks and some things that are maybe still coming, but just a few quick things to think about on the distribution piece, because the content is nothing if no one ever sees it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. We had Justin Rove Impactable on the show not long after LinkedIn ads, thought leadership ads got released, which was, like you say, a few months back now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities now with LinkedIn thought leader ads, especially as they are, like you mentioned, I believe, allowing you to have folks that aren't necessarily within your company to be able to promote posts on their end as well. So like you said, perhaps you have got external evangelists that maybe could say they're an advisor at your company or not, and allowing them to then boost that post effectively to their network, to their audience, to get the bang for buck. But like you said there, a really good tip is to, if a post already resonates, so if we're talking from LinkedIn perspective, if it's getting some organic engagement, it's getting likes, it's getting comments, it's getting shares, you can see that people are actually resonating with it, it's striking a chord.
Yes.
And then amplifying that with paid spend, I think that's the smart move rather than just guessing, which is the same for most content, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was a tip I got from Justin Rowe, which I connected with him after you were a guest on our Agency Life podcast. So, you know, this whole idea of kind of living in the market, identifying evangelists, it takes some networking, it takes some work. But I think this conversation is kind of a little bit of a meta example of how that can happen, because that's where I kind of heard this idea from Justin of let your LinkedIn post kind of from the individuals, let it play out organically, kind of see what pops. Because one, then you're putting paid spend behind something you have some validation in already rather than guessing. And two, when it does get promoted, the thing about thought leader ads is they look more organic because you've got someone's little face, their avatar there, right? Now you see the likes and the comments and the repost to it, it looks even more organic, and you're more likely to engage with it, even though it has that little tiny thing that says promoted. The other thing, just to not to go too deep on this rabbit hole, but one thing to think about is, you and I both know, Sam, and a lot of B2B marketers listening to this, know this, if you put a link in your post on LinkedIn, that can really hurt the organic reach. I have one company I was looking at their LinkedIn performance across some of their internal evangelists, and it was a 47% decrease on their LinkedIn posts that had a link in it versus one that didn't or had it in the comments. And so what you can do is you have this post, you see if it kind of pops off for that internal or external evangelist, then you go and promote it via LinkedIn thought leader ad. You can edit it and now add the link, because originally you're trying to get organic reach. Mm-hmm. Now you're paying for the reach and you want to optimize conversion. Now add the link in. That was a tip I got from Justin as well.
Yeah. It's a great one. I'm always messing around with a LinkedIn post, man. Like, sometimes if I think my posts are popping off organically, then I'll be like, okay, 2 hours later, I'm going to edit it. I'm going to put a CTN, a link in, try and get a few, snag a few newsletter signups, or drive a few more visits to my traffic, to my website. So great tips. There's like you say, there's almost endless possibilities that you can do with that. You can target account lists. You can drive it to cold audiences that maybe fit your ideal client profile in terms of business size, decision makers you want to target, and so on. You can even retarget existing traffic from your website, identify those, and then put layers on that so then it hones on your ICP. So there's a lot of plays, and I'm glad you brought it up. Is there any, on a side note, Logan, are there any slightly unusual or lesser known ways or perhaps different approaches that you've seen when it comes to distributing the content that you're creating with evangelists, be it internal or external, that have played out nicely?
Let's see. That's a really good question. And I know as a podcast host, when my guests say that's a really good question, they don't have something right off the top of their head. So that's what I'm telling you. To me, it's really been, it's been LinkedIn. I mean, I think one thing here that most people maybe have thought about already, but if we're honest with ourselves, we don't actually execute, is that we create one piece of content. Let's say it's a 45-second video clip from this podcast interview, right? And what do we normally do? We either post it from our side, and then we ask the guest to hit repost, or we give it to them and maybe they post it and then we hit repost. You have that one piece of content that should be distributed with multiple evangelists. So go ahead and post that through the company page, but then 3 days later, post it through the host's personal profile. Then work with your guest on when they're going to post it. So using that one piece of content multiple times, I do think changing up the copy and that sort of stuff, but I don't think that LinkedIn is going to penalize you for having that same video go across. Like I've seen kind of people do takeover times, or like when Refine Labs hit some sort of milestone in their growth, they had this video like celebrating the milestone. And I saw it all over LinkedIn for a week, not because they posted it once or they even had their CEO post it, which, you know, he's a great example. Chris Walker, no longer CEO of Refine Labs, but anyhow, you know, they didn't just have him post it and then have the whole team go and hit repost or even comment. That's a good step one. But then they had natively new posts going out with that same piece of content. And so I think that's maybe not completely novel. I feel like I'm not living up to the hype of that question, but something that I think a lot of people are missing. And if you're honest with yourself, you could maybe do this week and tweak with some of your existing distribution strategies and get a little bit more juice for the squeeze, as I've heard before.
No, I like that. I like that for sure. I think that's smart. I think one challenge I've seen, I don't know if you've come across the same, Logan, this is going on a bit of a tangent, but as a podcast host, I've always seen that you're probably much the same with your show. Once we set a show live, we send out guests a promotional kit, which will have, I don't know, between three and five promotional video snippets under a minute, their artwork, and of course the links to the show. And we'll say, if you're kind enough to share this with your network, we've cut up some nice clips so you can easily just paste it. We'll even maybe put some prompts for the post. Usually it's quite a slim rate of folks that guest on the show that actually want to do it.
You're not maybe alone 50, there, Sam.
Maybe 50%. So I don't know if you've seen the same, but it sounds like you have.
I've seen some shows that I've consulted on and worked on where it's below the 50%. And I can tell you recently I had a guest on one of the podcasts that I host, and we had like maybe 6, 7, 8 clips. And, you know, those weren't shared on the guest side. That is, we did go through, you know, the process we've been talking about here to share it otherwise.
Nice.
But I think one way to head this off, my buddy, Joseph Lewin, who just went out on his own, I don't know the name of his new company, but he was with Proofpoint Marketing for a number of years. When I was a guest on their podcast, you know, most people, when you're guesting on a podcast, we send a Calendly or a HubSpot meeting link or something like that, or maybe a Google form to get a little bit of information from the guest. He had a question in there that said, you know, would you be interested in sharing content from this episode with your audience? And it was like, nope, not interested. Or yeah, give me all the content. I'll definitely share it. And I thought that was a nice touch to kind of, one, feel them out. Cause some people will be very excited and like, give me more. I've had guests like, do you have any more clips? And I'm like, I can spin up some more if you want, if you're actually going to share them. And then I've had exactly what you said there, put all this time into creating content for them to use to promote their episode. And then it doesn't happen. So I think asking the question earlier in a form is one way. You could also do it just kind of pre-interview of like, hey, Sam, you're going to be a guest on the show. I'm going to create probably three videos out of this. I've been experimenting with the 4:5 aspect ratio on LinkedIn and then doing the 9:16 on YouTube Shorts and Instagram. You know, what channels do you think you might share it on if I got you some video clips? Oh, I'm really trying to do more YouTube Shorts right now. Sweet. I'll get you three of the 9:16 format, you know, if you'll plan on sharing those out. By the way, if you share them in the first week the episode goes live, that's really, you know, a good thing. Oh, yeah, I could do that. Okay, what day do you think? And so just by kind of, it's a little bit of an assumptive close there that you can use by offering them some options to say this or that to. You can kind of get that pre-commitment. Is it still 100% even with that? No, because we're all humans, right? And we get busy and all those sorts of things. But I think that can help mitigate a little bit of that. Here's your promo kit. Crickets.
Yeah, no, that's such a great tip, man, setting expectations up front. And I love that, adding it to your calendar invite or adding it to the calendly question, like when you're collecting their name, email, and all that good stuff about the recording, maybe asking about topics they want to speak about, and then saying would you be open to sharing content when it's live. And obviously if they say hard no, you can save everyone time. But then I suppose flipping that to perhaps if you've got an internal evangelist, and perhaps if it's your CEO, and perhaps they just say, look, I'm too busy to be doing LinkedIn posts, then you know that your team's got to spend some time perhaps doing that on their behalf.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there are some ways that you can do that. If it's internal, then oftentimes that executive may be willing to give you access to, you know, their LinkedIn profile to post for them. We all know a lot of big LinkedIn creators, they have ghostwriters, and they have, you know, Gary Vee and Alex Hormozi are not hitting the post button on LinkedIn. And we all know that, and we're okay with that, right? We know that they're ultimately the source of the content. You can do the same thing, get access to their LinkedIn profile, or you can use a couple of tools. I've recently been looking at, we use Sprout Social for a lot of our social content scheduling at teamwork.com across Instagram and LinkedIn and that sort of stuff. And I'm pretty sure I saw recently that you can actually add personal profiles to the connected profiles within Sprout Social. So you could even do it in a more automated way. A recent tool I also came across that's specific to LinkedIn that might allow you to set up kind of this team drafting and posting is Authored Up without a space, Authored ED Up. And then I think you can create drafts for people. They might have to go in and hit post, but those are maybe three different ways you could think about activating and really distributing with those internal evangelists that don't have the time to go in, edit, draft the post. Even if it is just copy and paste, you can make it even easier for them with just a few tools.
Love it. Love it, man. Cool. I think we're on to point five.
Yes. Track. Absolutely. So I'd like to divide this again into a talk with my hands a ton. So if you're just listening to the audio of this, check out the video version on YouTube, on Sam's channel. Two buckets when it comes to track, quantitative and qualitative. So when I think about the quantitative, going back to some of the things we were talking about, if you're looking at conversions and maybe you're dropping those links in, maybe after you boost the post on LinkedIn from your internal or external evangelist, after they become a LinkedIn thought leader ad, after they've played out organically, use UTM links. Or if you're using a partner affiliate tracking program like PartnerStack or Everflow, you can use referral link tracking. Those sorts of, any sort of link tracking you can leverage here in an evangelist motion, just like you would if you're activating any other channel and you're putting some of those tracking parameters in. So quantitatively on conversion, those are two things to think about. Quantitatively on reach and impact, maybe your goal isn't necessarily conversion, which I would encourage you to think about. How can I just create more reach and awareness and hopefully affinity that will then lead to conversion further down the road? And so if LinkedIn is the primary channel you're activating and distributing content with your evangelist, as we're talking about today, Shield is a great analytics platform for LinkedIn that you can use as well. The previous tool I mentioned, Authored Up, that helps you with like drafting and looking at stuff across profiles, may have some tracking built into it now as well. So those are two that you can look at from a quantitative measurement perspective to see what posts are popping off, how much reach are we getting, how much follower growth, Maybe you've got a system where you activate your CEO and then your marketing leader. And then maybe you've got an ambitious salesperson who wants to be an internal mini evangelist as well. You can look at the team's metrics in Shield and look at how things are going over time. That helps you track, helps you prove the ROI, and also helps you keep those evangelists motivated. Because let's face it, you know, there's a little bit of gamification that probably needs to happen here. It was funny. I was interviewing Ryan Musselman for my show Nearbound Marketing, and he said, if you have an employee evangelist program, what people often miss is an official opt-in, official sign-up, and official rewards. And so if you don't have that rhythm of showing them how it's going, how it's contributing, then it kind of all falls flat. Nothing's quote-unquote official. It's just all kind of like, will you do this? You did it. Okay, will you do it again? How about, here's how it went. Here's what you could do better. Here's the impact of that. So think about those. Those are all the quantitative side. We'll share some qualitative stuff, but I'll pause there and let you jump in, Sam.
Yeah, I like those points. I like the gamification, because I imagine certainly if we loop back to what you talked about earlier, Logan, where you said kind of sharing, perhaps you have done that once a month session with your CEO, then you're encouraging the rest of your team to share that perhaps on a set out cadence. If there's not really anything in it for the rest of your team and you're just saying, look, you need to share this every Friday or every Monday or Wednesday, I think
you need to I could do that,
but I don't really want to. I'd rather promote my side hustle or whatever I'm doing. Yeah. Whereas if there's some kind of incentive, then they're much likely, they're much more likely to do it. Like, what's in it for them if they're just sharing the CEO's post or doing their own post, trying to think of what to put, or maybe you've given them content for the post if it is on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But even so, I like the idea of gamifying it and giving them a bit of a boost for kind of actually doing that for your organization. So that's nice.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing I would be curious to know is, and I'm sure that the audience would be here as well, is, so we can see that if you're having call to actions in the post, be it linking in the comments on LinkedIn or be it directly putting a link perhaps with the UTM in the post at a later stage, which might be through to booking a demo, it might be requesting more information, it might be joining your newsletter, getting a lead magnet, whatever.
Right.
That aside, is there a timeline that you've seen from starting an evangelist program to actually seeing an impact on pipeline, i.e. qualified leads coming in that are then you can attribute to the evangelist? Maybe they filled out a form and said, I was constantly seeing this person's posts, or they raised it on a sales call, so I've constantly seen evangelist content from this person on your team. Is there some kind of measurement that we can have in our mind, i.e. it's going to take this long before we see anything off the back of it?
I think that it can happen very, very quickly. So the company I was mentioning earlier that I was taking a look at some of their LinkedIn content and their strategy for them, they saw one of their executives gain 1,200 followers in her first four posts on LinkedIn. She had been on LinkedIn for 10 plus years and literally never posted, and gained 1,200 followers in her first four posts. Now, that's kind of on the reach and impact. You're talking more about seeing some results like qualified opportunities, maybe some pipeline. That same agency saw their executives get leads via text, via their DMs in the first 30 days of starting to put out content from their internal evangelists that they were activating. One of those was, it was pretty much like this. It was, hey, I'm at a new company now, and we've worked together in the past, and your most recent LinkedIn post made me think of you. It was literally like, and then texted the individual, and it was kind of one of those like, new phone, who dis? It was like, I don't recognize this number.
Nice.
It's like, oh, it's so-and-so from this company. We worked together 2 years ago. And so was that maybe reactivation of a previously warm leaded? Sure. But would they have come to mind had they not been top of mind through that new LinkedIn content? We don't know exactly, right? So I would say in the first 30, 60, 90 days, there should be some indicators that something's happening.
I suppose that's just made me think that there's so many more plays. And I've seen this play out on LinkedIn. I'm sure you're the same, Logan, that we know this as we're actively creating content, not just on LinkedIn, but other channels, that all this stuff isn't good for creating net new pipeline, i.e. with folks that have maybe recently started following you or recently have seen your stuff, but it's also good for prospects that maybe dropped off the pipeline, i.e. you spoke to them last year, Maybe they move roles, they move jobs, something happened, they tried to do it internally and failed. They're constantly seeing your content. They're thinking, well, we've crashed and burned at this. I'm going to reach back out to Logan, or I'm going to reach back out to Sam. Or they're already in your pipeline. It's just a slow burner, slow moving opportunity. And because they've seen you consistently posting stuff that actually resonates, strikes a chord, talks about the problems they have, maybe shares some results, answers questions in their niche, that they thought, well, this is the only person for the job. So it's almost sped up the deal cycle. So there's so many added benefits rather than just net new opportunities, yes, kind of speeding up deal velocity, increasing kind of likeliness to go with you and being remembered, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of one of the podcasts that I host that we've talked about previously, Agency Life by Teamwork.com. We did an entire episode on what Dev Basu calls the dead lead reviver, and going like through that. This process of you mark something closed, lost in HubSpot, right? And you put in a sequence to kick off 6 months from now, right? That has a series of emails. And maybe now with this sort of content that you're posting, you can even link to a LinkedIn post. You can link to a podcast episode, right? In that sequence to follow up something that is very applicable to that prospect's problem. So I think you're spot on there. And then I think, you know, we talked about quantitatively tracking, but don't forget about the qualitative stuff. If you're getting texts or DMs, like that one agency we were just talking about a moment ago that I had been helping a little bit, share those internally, you know, present those on that MBR. If you're looking at how's our evangelist program going with your leadership team, qualitatively, you can also use, if you're using Gong or any sort of call recording tool, make sure that you or your sales team are asking kind of an open-ended, how did you hear about us, right? How'd you hear about Breaking B2B? How'd you hear about teamwork.com? And if you have keyword trackers built into Gong or Fathom or whatever tool that you're using, you can put in keywords like LinkedIn, podcast, live stream, those sorts of things, and start to then manually bucket those and attribute those a little bit. And then the other piece kind of tied to this idea is self-reported attribution on your actual book a demo forms or schedule a consultation form, those sorts of things. And having that open text field that Chris Walker and the folks at Refine Labs have been evangelizing for a long time, because people will tell you things that they wouldn't in that dropdown of Google ad, LinkedIn content, friend, billboard, right? Whatever. They'll say, I've been following Sam's LinkedIn content for a long time, just recently checked out the podcast and listened to this episode. And they will tell you more when you give them a little bit more space. So those can contribute to your qualitative tracking of your evangelism efforts as well.
Appreciate it, man. And appreciate the breakdown. I think we've covered almost every nook and cranny. I think you've given some sound advice. So even folks that may be in a startup, maybe it's just them as the founder, mm-hmm, on how they can get started, and then right through to larger organizations that have got multiple members of the team on how perhaps you can use the CEO or another industry expert within your organization and how you can do that monthly session, how you can then repurpose that content, perhaps leveraging AI, perhaps not, and then involving the rest of your team to then get that content distributed in front of the right audience and then being able to track it effectively and perhaps even involve external evangelists. So with that, I want to thank you very much, Logan, for coming on the show. Really appreciate you sharing your expertise. Please do tell everyone more about how they can learn from you, connect with you, and the best way to get in touch.
Yeah, two places. If you are a founder or a leader of an agency or a professional service firm of any type, especially in B2B, I am hosting a bi-weekly podcast called Agency Life, where we're interviewing agency founders and leaders about marketing their agency, running operations, building a great team. We've got a great marketing name, Eric Sue, coming up, a very successful agency leader on the show here very soon. So check out Agency Life. You can get that at teamwork.com/agency-life. For me personally, LinkedIn is where I'm most active. If you couldn't tell from today's conversation, so just look me up, LoganLyles, Logan Lyles on LinkedIn. And right in my profile, I've got a link to my free content toolkit. So as you could hear, I'm a bit of a geek. I'm a bit of a tech head. I'm always saying, like, check out this tool for this and this tool for this and shortcut this. I've got a lot of those linked right in my bio under my profile photo. So connect with me on LinkedIn. Let me know you heard me on Sam's show, and check out that toolkit right in my profile.
Appreciate it, dude. And we shall put those links in the show notes below. I want to thank you once again, Logan. Really enjoyed the chat.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Cheers, man. And we've got to give a quick shout out to the sponsor of the show, Revenue Hero and Factors AI, for making this possible. And a big shout out to the audience for tuning in or watching today. And as always, if you want to join thousands of legends checking out past podcast episodes or the daily newsletter, head over to breakingb2b.com. And we shall catch you on the next one. Cheers.